Final hour of Overdrive here on TSN 1050. Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes, who should be enjoying himself. He's off for the next few days here because I'm in today and I'm in tomorrow. Jamie Noodles McClennan back from his SportsCenter hit. Jeff O'Dog O'Neill with you here. And we're about to get into a serious topic, guys. So we're going to bring in, shortly Oliver Platt from One Soccer. Because, I mean, it's touchy. It's heartbreaking. And that, of course, it involves the families, Canadian, Iranian families, who have suffered greatly after, the airplane was shot down in Iran in January of 2020, killing all 176 on board, 85 of them were Canadian. And as we know, recently Canada Soccer announced a friendly against Iran to prepare themselves for the World Cup. They've qualified for the World Cup for the first time since 1986. It's a really, big deal. And I know Ollie will take us through some stuff here, but, just quickly to explain a timeline of things, Canada Soccer, and I know this speaking to them, booked this strictly from a sports perspective. That was a team that they could afford, because a lot of these big names, I know everyone's like, get this person, get that person. They cost millions. This was within their budget. And they also felt from a tactical perspective, this was a team that could prepare them for the World Cup. It's a team outside of CONCACAF. That's who they wanted to play. It's a team ranked 21st in the world as well. And it's a team who's going to the World Cup. So they felt that this was really good for them to be able to prepare. And then, of course, the families, the victims of this horrendous act, then spoke out and said, we don't like this. The Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, was asked about it. And he said, this is something that Canada Soccer has to answer for. And hence we go from there. The pressure was on. Canada Soccer has now canceled it. So let's bring in now Oliver Platt with One Soccer. I gave a little bit of a history there, Ollie. I guess first things first, though, are you a little bit surprised, though, that Canada Soccer did, in fact, cancel this? Or do you think this was really, given all the information coming out, their only option to do so?
I was surprised initially, yeah. Just because I think everything we'd heard over the past few days suggested that, just the negative consequences of cancelling this match at this point would be massive for Canada Soccer, and they are going to be significant, right? In terms of lost revenue, you're already seeing, the Iranian Federation come out just this afternoon and say they're going to be claiming the damages in the millions of dollars. I don't know how legitimate that case really is, but that's the situation they're now going to have to handle. And then on the sporting side of it as well, obviously, losing a game that is now going to be very, very difficult to replace at short notice, certainly with an opponent of a similar caliber. And this is only one of five games that Canada has left on its schedule before playing at the World Cup in the winter. So it's very damaging from a team's point of view as well. So all of those reasons made it seem as if, they would try to get this game to go ahead, try to manage the situation as best they could and play the match. But I think we've seen, it's just continued to build and build and build, right? Some of the things we've seen over the past few days in terms of, the money that it came out they were paying the Iranian Federation, some of the links between figures in the Iranian Federation and members of the part of the military that was directly responsible for the plane shooting a couple of years ago. Just a lot of things that really compromised Canada Soccer wanting to, clearly be in any way involved in this kind of match and this kind of arrangement.
So you mentioned that there's only five possibilities of getting in a match before the World Cup starts. What is there, some kind of makeshift backup plan so they can do something, or what is the plan going ahead?
I don't think there is, to be honest with you. I think they're trying to figure that out now. They have two matches against CONCACAF opponents and kind of weaker CONCACAF opponents than they probably like to be playing, but they're matches they have to play, so that's two of the five. And then they've got two slots in September where they'll try to play European teams and strong European teams to prepare for Belgium and Croatia at the World Cup. So this is the fifth slot, and obviously the first game of those five they were going to play. They wanted to play a team from outside of their region, like Andy mentioned, just because they haven't been able to do that throughout the pandemic. Finding a team of any kind of decent standard from somewhere else in the world on the notice that they've got now, in a couple of weeks' time, everyone's booked up, right? Everyone's got their own opponents, their own competitions to play in. So they're going to have to get creative here. Maybe they can find another national team that's of decent standing to try and try and get a friendly in that way, or maybe they have to do something really creative and try and play a club team, you know, an MLS team or something like that, which would be extremely unusual, but that's the kind of position they might find themselves in now.
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed reaction to this. I mean, obviously, the families, you know, who are affected, the 85 Canadians who were murdered, they're very loud. They have a lot of support. But there is another group, obviously, that, you know, wants sport to remain sport. They don't want athletes to have to suffer for things that their governments do. We've heard the term sport washing before. So there's this is not easy. This is not an easy topic. And I know, Ollie, you know, when you and I were discussing it earlier, the word we all kind of came up with was it's sad. It's just sad all around from both sides. You know, and it's just, it's very heartbreaking that, you know, we're in this type of situation, but it also brings up the bigger kind of existential question where, you know, is this going to go away? I mean, oh, we've even seen it now with the IIHF, but that's the big governing body who decided on their own for the World Championship and for the World Juniors that's been rescheduled for the summer that Russia and Belarus are not going to be playing because that's, you know, a country that's invading another one that's really affected the globe. I know this Canada-Iran thing is directly related to those two countries, but Ollie, Canada Soccer did come out with another press release, and in it, it said, we will be conducting a thorough review of our processes for the hosting of international matches to ensure no stone is left unturned in our pursuit of excellence, both on and off the pitch, including consultation with all stakeholders. We're committed to creating respectful and inclusive environments for teams, players, and fans. And I'd pose this question to you, where are we at that stage where sports governing bodies, do they need political advisors now?
Yeah, I think quite possibly is a massive lesson to Canada Soccer, and they're going to have to learn it very quickly because you look at the things that are stacking up ahead of them over the next few years. Firstly, Canada's going to a World Cup in a very controversial place in Qatar this winter. That's going to be something that they're going to handle. There will be questions asked about the situation in that country that they're going to have to be ready to respond to. And then in 2026, Canada is co-hosting a World Cup, and chances are Iran might qualify. Another country that, you know, we may not have great relations with or may not agree with on a lot of things may qualify and be coming to Canada to play games. So that's something that they're going to have to be, you know, prepared to handle. I do think this situation was a little bit different in the sense that, you know, Canada, if they want to play in the World Cup, which obviously they do, they have to go to Qatar. If they want to co-host the World Cup, they have to allow in all the countries that qualify through that process. I think the critics of this decision would say they didn't have to play Iran, right? That was a choice that they made when they could have found a different team to play. Now we know that there were, like you said, real sporting reasons for the choice of Iran, and it didn't go any further than that. They chose them because they thought they were the best opponent available when all the kind of circumstances were considered. But ultimately, that was a choice they made, and obviously one that they're going to have to wear a lot of criticism for now.
Oliver Platt, analyst with One Soccer, joining us here on Overdrive. You just mentioned, you know, 2026, Canada, we know, already is hosting the World Cup. We also know that Canada is putting together a bid to host the 2030 Olympics. It is a massive feather in the cap. It is a coup to be able to get a massive sporting event to be hosted in your country. It still brings in a lot of dollars, the infrastructure that it helps to build. You know, it is a big deal to be able to host. Do you think this is an isolated incident and people understand that, given that this is something that just happened 2 years ago, the wounds are very fresh? Or do you think there is some concern, of like FIFA, the IOC saying, well, wait a second, if Canada does this, should they even be considered a host in the future? Because are they going to just start banning countries from coming into their country?
Yeah, it's another big question. It's something in the past that, you know, FIFA is very strong on the idea that government should not interfere with the federations and their decision making in any way. They have punished countries in the past for doing that. Whether that will be the case here, I don't know. Obviously, Canada has quite a bit of influence at FIFA, with one of the vice presidents being Canadian in Victor Montagliani. So maybe this is a situation that they can kind of manage. But it's definitely something, that is going to be difficult going forwards. And we're seeing this all around the world now, right? In terms of soccer, the intertwining of soccer and politics is becoming more and more difficult to avoid than ever before, as it is in many sports. We've seen it with the Ukraine situation, with, you know, Russian owners like the one at Chelsea essentially being forced out of the club because of their links to the Russian state. I think a lot of these governing bodies, whether it be FIFA, whether it be the IOC, they've become more and more intertwined with, you know, big money in parts of the world where sometimes there are real problems, there are real human rights issues. And eventually that was always going to come back to catch up with us, right? And I think that is starting to happen undoubtedly in soccer right now. So it's becoming such a difficult thing to navigate. And like you said, is going to be something that, you know, organizations like Canada Soccer are going to have to think very hard about and much more about than they have in the past.
So obviously it's disappointing, again, from a sporting perspective. You know, Canada loses a game there, but they do have the other two with Nations CONCACAF League taking on Curacao and taking on Honduras as well in that June window before, again, they have another FIFA window in September. What do you think John Herdman is really going to try and hope to get from his team here? Do you think certain, you know, there's already a lock for about, you know, I think a couple people think already 15, 16 players are a lock. I just wonder where you think some of the decisions need to be made with that roster.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be very many, to be honest with you. I think that's about right, that, you know, you've got to remember this team has been together for quite a while now, over a couple of years, in terms of the amount of international matches they've played, the windows they've had together. When you played 14 games in that final round of qualifying, it's a lot, right? It's a lot of training sessions. It's a lot of time spent together, a lot of chemistry built. And I just don't think the way John Herdman has handled the team so far gives any suggestion that he's going to disrupt that in a big way before they actually go to the World Cup and play in the biggest games of their lives, right? I think he manages this quite a lot like a club team, really, where he does like to keep a consistent group of players together. Doesn't really, you know, he's not one to bring in new players easily. I think he has to be really convinced that they're going to add something to the group. So I'm sure there'll be two or three that managed to work their way in there that maybe had injuries or whatever the case may be over the past few months. But by and large, you can see from the squad he selected for these games that he's going to go with the guys who have got them there. And I think most people would say that's rightly so.
All right. Well, Oliver, appreciate you taking the time. And I know this is obviously a story we'll continue to follow, as we'll probably hear some more coming out of it. But again, Canada does still have two big games to prepare for in June. Ollie, appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Oliver Platt, analyst with One Soccer. Yeah, it's tough. I think I just want to end on this, guys. I think it's just also worth noting. Again, like I said, it's all around a sad situation. But I don't think people are saying enough that Canada Soccer didn't just announce that they were playing Iran. They had to go through many levels of approval, from FIFA to Vancouver to make sure Vancouver was okay with hosting, to the actual Canadian government. They got check marks across the board. They got approved across the board, hence why they made the announcement. I'm not trying to say Canada Soccer should be off the hook, because, again, I think sporting federations now need to be very aware of political climates now, whether, you know, people in the sports world like it or not.
But question I think is, Andy, why would they go through all of that if they knew they were going to be met with this?
But that's the point.
Wow.
Nobody at any point, from what I understand, people I've spoken to at Canada Soccer, nobody within the Canadian government at any point said, you might get some backlash, which is why
That's what blows my mind. Nobody gave them a heads up saying you might run into this and save yourself from it. Why didn't someone do that?
Well, and on top of that, I read a piece today, Andy, about it. Like Trudeau weighed in. Like, where was that? Like, you know, if it worked its way up, all of a sudden, like, you know, like you saying, they checked off all the boxes as far as getting approval, all of that. Like, they didn't just show up and say, hey, you know, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you get a sense, and maybe that's what you're saying, it's become even more political as it gained more traction, mm-hmm. type of thing?
100%. Because, well, here's the irony of it all. It's actually because of sport. It's because Canada Soccer booked this game that so many things have come to light with these Canadian-Iranian families and what they've been fighting for with the Canadian government, looking for justice against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. We probably wouldn't have known any of this if it wasn't for actually this game being scheduled. So go figure that irony. Although I do believe Canada Soccer did the right thing in canceling it. But, yeah, I mean, nobody was really talking about this until the families themselves said, this is a slap in the face. This is a fresh wound. This just happened January 2020. And by the way, we're still trying to deal with the Canadian government to get some sort of, you know, compensation and try to get any kind of justice for their families. So then Justin Trudeau was asked about it. And that's what set off the firestorm, because then he turned around and said, I don't think it was a good idea. You have to ask Canada Soccer about it. I mean, he kind of threw them under the rug there,
right?
Which was a little or under the bus, I should say. So that was a little unfortunate. But then everything else came out. There were multiple reports of the players themselves getting concerned for their own safety. And there's been reports of people knocking on the doors of Canada Soccer officials, putting pressure on them. That has to be scary. I mean, two wrongs don't make a right either. So there was a lot going on here. There was a lot at play. And listen, it doesn't help when a photo comes out that was just taken in April of the head of the Iranian Soccer Federation with a dude who's wanted by the FBI for plotting kidnappings, even on Canadian soil, by the way. So
yeah, that's not good.
It's just, it was all very, very ugly. But I can see Canada Soccer looked at this from a sporting perspective only. And I guess the big question is, can they do that? Can any sporting federation do that from now on? I mean, just a couple years ago, big hockey tournament was moved from Belarus because of political tensions that were happening there, and then obviously the concern, you know, for safety of the athletes. It's happening more and more, guys.
It is.
Serious stuff. I feel like Wolf Blitzer right now.
It is very serious stuff. And I'll just, I mean, bring it back before we put a bow on this. Like, think of, you know, the war in Ukraine right now. And, you know, what the trickle-down effect is, you know, Russian players not being allowed to participate. I believe, you know, there was a couple hockey tournaments that were taken out of Russia, you know, based on that. I mean, you just mentioned sports and real world, there's a they cross over. And that's ultimately what's happened here. And, you know, that's the world we live in.
Yeah. And again, in some ways, the irony of it all, I was reminded of that January 2020 flight that was shot down. And it's, I can't even imagine what those families are going through. So devastating. 85 Canadians killed. 85 Canadians, which is really, really sad. So I do think that at the end of the day, it's sad, but it was, you know, it was the right call, I think, to cancel that game. And now they'll continue their preparations. This is a strong team. So gotta have some faith. It's a strong team. And John Herdman, they're in good hands with him. When we come back, we're going to get our boy James Duthie on. I don't even know. I feel like whenever Duthie is on with you guys, you just go everywhere and anywhere. Or is there like a specific topic we should hit with him?
He goes down any alley.
Wherever he wants.
He's very knowledgeable. Hockey, stupid stuff, golf.
Well, yeah, he's all over the map. I mean, O accuses him of dyeing his hair. There's all sorts of, like, levels to the Duthie situation.
Well, he's 56 years old, and his hair is, like, I call it, what is it?
Immaculate, I think.
It's like a dark brown.
What is that stuff that you guys put? I mean, other than dye, but don't guys have something else? Or is it, I don't know, that hair for men, it's the natural.
Yes, you just, like, comb it in or whatever. At the start of this season, I put some black, the jet black, the Jimmy Benning on the side, and I was trying to get noticed. And it went south on me because I left it in there too long, and I swore I would never do it anymore. Now
did it look like someone took like a marker and just like drew in your hairline?
What happened was I put it on, and I got a phone call. You're supposed to put it on like 8 to 10 or 12 minutes or something. I got a phone call, and I forgot, and I came back, and it had melted into my scalp and everything. So I was, like, rattled because I took a shower at, like, 3:20 before a 4 o'clock show. So I was washing it. Like, my scalp was black. It was a gong show.
Ugh.
So I swore it off. I was like, I'm never doing that again. Like, I've got some grays coming in. I'm just going to let it breathe. You know, eventually, a year from now, I'm going to be fully gray. That's what it is.
You do you. I will say, I fell asleep one time.
Yes.
With those whitening strips on my teeth.
Oh, God.
Do you have any idea what even breathing did to my teeth? Because they became so sensitive.
Oh, I would guess,
with that chemical gel on them. You're like, ugh. Like, I couldn't. Oh, I mean, you wouldn't right now know that feeling. Oh.
No.
But
wait till I had the next 10 days after tomorrow, I can't, like, I'll be eating soup.
Really? Why?
Well, you get brand new, like, replacements. I don't know what the deal is. All I was told was, I'm going to have teeth tomorrow. And then 4 months later, the actual real ones, which I don't know why they can't go in tomorrow, but like you can't exactly bite into an apple tomorrow. So
no, I think it's they can't put something permanent yet without your mouth molding to it, because if you do that and then it doesn't work, you can't get them out now.
I'm just praying that, like, just, you know, like, what's that movie, Matt Dillon from Something About Mary, where he shows up with just these giant chompers?
I'm no, just noodles.
Praying. He's like, this is all I brought had, my, man.
It was kind of gross, but I bought the ones that broke off in. Yeah. And I said, these ones are the perfect shape, so don't be shy to replicate them.
That's what you got to do. Your smile is everything,
I'm telling you, a tiny little bit, like, you look like you got a horse mouth. If you like, if they're a little bit long, you look like a – they got to be perfect.
It's the piano teeth. I've seen some hockey players who get them done when they retire, and I'm like, oh,
they look
wow,
like piano
it's great.
Keys. Exactly. Like, yeah. You just – they can't be too big. I'd
no.
rather no, they were too small.
No,
like,
they've got – but no matter what, Jamie, I think from going from nothing, when I see teeth again, they're going to look gigantic because there's been nothing there.
I know, but, like, if you, they just need to be level with the other ones. Like, if
no
they are
kidding.
A
no
little
get them
longer
bright
and
white.
Got,
I want bright white.
Oh, I,
so when you
I'm
smile, there's
way.
Like that little twinkle.
I want them like wood color or something. Like the doctor was like, listen, we were unable to do this. Is all we got. Like he just hands it to. Remember the Caber story? It was like, we couldn't dye them the yellow that you have.
Yeah.
Like
he poor bastard. The guy went in the back and the assistant said to the dentist, we just can't find a yellow enough stain. He was.
Oh, that is disgusting.
Caber was so horrified. Like he was like. The dentist was his best friend, and he heard the guy go in the back. He's like, we don't have a yellow enough replacement. He's got to go somewhere else.
Yeah,
we can't. Caber said he wanted to crawl into a hole. Anyway, let's break for Duffy.
That's going to be you tomorrow. I'm actually really Chompers. Excited now. I am really it. Excited to see these teeth for tomorrow. All right, James Zutty is going to be joining us next year on Overdrive. Don't go anywhere. Oh, hello, James Duffy, popping on to Overdrive now. Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes, Zoodles O-Dog, and Jamie. Where have you been?
What do you mean, where have I been?
I don't know. I haven't seen you in forever.
I'm doing the post games. You got to stay up and watch the late editions of SportsCenter. Do you stay up? Do you stay up for the Battle of Albertas? Come on, be honest now. Do you stay up till the 1:30? Because I would cheat sometimes in PVR and watch games in the morning. I'll admit to that, but when I'm working, I'm there for it.
When I was hosting Leafs Lunch and they had those like the West Coast run, oh, I would definitely PVR and watch it the next day because I would make it through the first period.
Yeah.
But then I'm not lasting. And now I have got a puppy, if you recall. Mm-hmm. A few months back, I asked you for advice on having multiple dogs in the house.
Right.
Did get her, and without fail, she's up at 6 a.m. She doesn't care if, you know, I went to bed earlier or if I work till 1 a.m. Like, she's
why
up
don't
at
you
6
tell
a.m.
the breeder, look, I'll throw in an extra $1,000, train the dog, and then I'll take it when it's ready. Why don't people do that?
Because I forgot what puppyhood was like.
That is so true. Even like in 2 years, I had at the peak, one of my dogs died last year, but I had three. And one of them, so I guess it takes probably about 5 years to completely forget how much of a pain in the you know what that puppies are.
Yeah.
And this one was up like all night for 6 months or something.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just this one. Like, French Bulldogs, which I have, are not smart. And and I'm a suck sometimes. So once you let them out, they want to be out again or up on the bed or whatever it may be. So I do sympathize with you because you forget how, you know what, you should just buy a dog that's a year old and train. Kind of like what O's saying. Like
got to go adopt.
Everybody loves the puppies, but let's face it, it's like 2 months of cute puppiness and then they're just a normal dog. So
what about a puppy nanny? There's got to be puppy nannies out there. I'm telling you, that's a good job.
Well, you train the dog. They have to work the overnight shift. You have to get an overnight puppy nanny.
Let me ask you this.
I have a night nurse for what, your baby?
A night nanny. I'm telling you, a dog night nanny is $1 million business.
But what about, like, my understanding, there's a saying, like, I'm in the dog house. Like, there's no dog houses in the backyard anymore where you just throw them out at night and that's it?
It's not 1980 for crying. My dog, when we were growing up, the dog had a little chain and it would just sleep in the house. And in the morning
that's
it came
I mean.
In.
Like,
that
exactly.
stuff don't happen anymore.
There's a
is that abuse, technically?
It would be, I guess, now because we're all so soft. They there's a trend on TikTok or Instagram where there's this soundbite. I don't know who's saying it. It's a guy talking to his dog and says, you know, 200 years ago or 100 years ago, you would be out in the wild scavenging for your own food. And yeah, people keep posting pictures of their dogs, like, dressed in little outfits under the covers in bed and using that soundbite. And it's so true.
It is. They're absolutely spoiled. I've been lucky where she sleeps through the night. I've been very lucky. But she is up at 6 a.m. And like I said, puppies are falsely advertised because they come cute, cuddly. Mine is a walking piranha. And she bites my chin, and she bites my nose, and she bites my hands. And it's just bite, 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 bite. There's no cuddling. There is zero cuddling.
Try having a dog that doesn't use their back legs anymore but still wants to go for walks. So literally I go for a walk every day, and I have to carry the one dog like a football. And she's like 35 pounds, this fat Frenchie. The other dog walks. I put her down for about, she walk about 10 feet, then she wants back up.
Jimmy, so, get her the back leg wheelchair thing.
I got the wheelchair. She doesn't like the wheelchair. She wants me to carry her.
Get a wagon. Get like those little wagons. Pull it in a red wagon.
Okay, we have a stroller. I'll admit to it. So I'm the guy now that walks around the neighborhood sometimes.
What? No.
But I won't do it. Look it. I won't do it. But when my wife comes with me, she puts the dog in a stroller, and we stroll around. And I feel so embarrassed that when people walk by us. Because they don't know that the dog's disabled. They just think we're idiots. So I feel the need to say to all the strangers that I pass by, yeah, the dog's disabled. That's why we got the stroller. It's not me. My wife insisted.
That's why I said go wagon. It just feels less weird. I'm a dog lover, but I even think the stroller is taking it to another level. I'm like, I'll do a wagon. But I don't know if I'm doing that stroller thing. But anyways, all right, there's our I knew we were going to have some sort of weird talk with you, but I'm glad it went the puppy way. But you are working tonight because you do have some games here. Who do you have in this battle of Alberta?
I'm the terrible, like, FanDuel would never hire me to replace MJ because I'm a terrible prediction guy. I have to think that Calgary has life tonight because they've been too good a team all year and they responded against Dallas a couple of times when they were down. So I think back on home ice they do, with the caveat at the end of that, but that if they maybe they just can't figure out McDavid and he's just going to win the series. And when I say him, you know, the extension with Draisaitl and Kane, et cetera, but them, I suppose that might be the possibility that they just can't figure it out. Yeah. They haven't figured it out in the last two games. But I think Calgary will have a response tonight and we'll probably end up in Edmonton for game six.
I agree. It's just everyone you talk to, like, I mean, even going into the series, I think we all, I don't know, if you chose Calgary, you know, I think we all chose Calgary. So that team has been more consistent. I think they look deeper. They look more battle-tested as far as playoff-style hockey.
I went to one thing, Jamie, goalie.
Well, the goalie, yeah, we even talked about it, like Markstrom over Mike Smith. But I think everyone had in the back of the mind, 97 could be the great equalizer for all of this. But we didn't know what it looked like. And now we know what that kind of, like, a guy who's that dominant, like, everyone in their mind is like, well, 97 could be a difference maker. Well, how much is it going to be? I witnessed it. I was at games 2 and 3. Like, this guy was a video game beyond it. It was ridiculous. And if he shows up tonight, like, I'm expecting Calgary to win, but if 97 just is like, not on my watch. Like, who knows how that's going to unfold? And I think that's kind of what's happened here in this round against Calgary.
I think the mistake that maybe was made was not that we said, you know, kind of like the Tampa-Toronto series where the belief was that maybe the stars of each team would just, you know, they'd knock each other off by being fairly equal. And I think people said that to an extent in this series, that Calgary's first line was so great all year that if they could be close to the McDavid line, then Calgary was stronger elsewhere, like you say, in goal, and that might be the difference. And I don't think any of us anticipated the gap between the two, the gap between the best players being as large as it's been, and that's frankly been the difference, and that's why Daryl said what he said today. And I think that line will have a decent night tonight for Calgary.
We love our stories, though, James. I mean, you know, from a media perspective, we want what's going to make headlines. And it's not that I'm trying to be a Calgary hater here. It's not that I'm even trying to come down on St. Louis. But who doesn't want McDavid versus McKinnon?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, where are you on just kind of from a media perspective, storytelling. And yeah, I mean, I think it'll be great hockey and great performances by those guys regardless. But I mean, would that also be a motivation to be like, yeah, maybe I want the Oilers and I want Colorado to go
100%. If you're neutral, and like most of us are, I think, in a series like this, right? We just want what's the most entertaining thing that we can talk about every night. And that would be it. And in the immortal words of the great 1980s or 90s philosophers, Chris Cross, Daddy Mac will make you jump, jump. The Mac Dad will make you jump, jump. And I think they were talking about
a McDavid
McKinnon series.
Yeah. Chris Cross was.
I just got it now.
Were you even around for Chris
yeah,
Cross?
Yeah, because you know what? For one Halloween, I wore my jeans backwards. I was Chris Cross for Halloween. My girlfriend and I both wore our jeans backwards. That was their thing, right? That was their trademark.
Was
their pants were backwards.
Which is just like the dumbest trend ever. And what they were about like 12 years old, weren't they?
Yeah. They were little munchkins. I had a crush on them because we were the same age. And yeah, we dressed up as them for Halloween. Yeah, I know Chris Cross, Duffy.
Well, I apologize to 75% of the listeners who probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But.
Well, either way, I think everyone's wishing for it. Calgary we haven't seen their big guys show up yet, you know, consistently. Game one, obviously. Game one, I thought Calgary just ran him out of the building, which was, and Markstrom kind of made it close. Like, that wasn't a 9-6 game. That was a 9-2 game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Markstrom didn't have a great second period. But through that, Edmonton has gotten their act together. Now, it'll be interesting to see if they can continue that on. But if I'm the Oilers, it's you do anything you can to get the win tonight. If they've got to find a way to defend and win 1-0, that's what you do. Like, you've got an opportunity to move on. Like, this has to be a desperate game. You can't go, oh, we got three cracks at this. Like, you don't want to give them life.
Yeah, 100%. That whole killer instinct thing we talk about, because you look at Colorado-St. Louis, and it looked like they were doing that last night with the 3-0 lead, and McKinnon looked like he was saying, forget this, I want this thing over with tonight. And 3-1 feels so big, right? When you're sitting there with three cracks ahead at you, like you have so much leeway. But when you think about that, the way St. Louis won that game last night, doesn't it feel to you like suddenly, even though they have two cracks, including one at home, that all the heat is suddenly on Colorado? And
are they going to
fold again, right? And St. Louis is playing with house money, even though they're not, right? They want to win as much as Colorado, but it feels that way. And so that's where I think you have to be really careful if you're the Oilers. If you give Calgary any sort of headway, suddenly the pressure all falls back on you. Because if you lose in a situation like this where you're on the road for game five and you lose that, now you're coming home and you feel like you have to win the one at home because you don't want to go back there. And so it starts to play mind games with you and the pressure ends up on you.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I want to go just outside of hockey here only, Duffy, because I know you're a big football fan. I know you love your NFL. And I just don't know where you are with the latest story, obviously, on Colin Kaepernick and training with the Raiders. And it sounds like it went well and we last saw him in 2016. And, you know, it's been really difficult. He's obviously wanted to come back in, and it just sounds like the noise, if that's what you want to call it, just that kind of accompanied him. It seemed like the NFL, at least teams, were scared to bring him back, right? Let's put it that way.
Right.
Do you think they're ready for him now? If he impresses, I mean, the bottom line is he has to be able to play. He still has to be a good quarterback. You have to contribute to your team.
Right.
Do you think they're ready now?
I think so. I mean, I think it's a crock that he never got a shot before. And the Raiders historically have been, that's one thing the Raiders have been good at is I think they had one of the first female assistant coaches and they've done a lot of things like that. So, but realistically, you know, can a guy who's been out, how long has it been, Andy?
2016.
Okay, so.
Six years, seven years.
A guy who hasn't played in 6 years and was...
You're awfully tough.
He was a great athlete. Like, I'm a Niners fan, so he was a great athlete, but never a great quarterback. And I think if he'd stayed in the game, maybe he could have become a great quarterback. But to be away from the game 6 years, I feel like he's almost set up for failure now. Now, it would be if it was a second string or third string spot. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter as much, perhaps, but... I feel it's awful that he didn't get that opportunity a year later or whatever when he was still at his peak athletically, because he could have been a difference maker for somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just It's so unfortunate. You know, he was recently on a podcast as well where he was, you know, and I mean, the proof is there. It's not just him saying it, right? Where, you know, sales going through the roof on whoever he represented. Like, there was a huge fan base, if that's what you call it, but massive support for him and what he stood for. I think it's a little misleading when people say, oh, no, they actually, you know, the NFL didn't give him a chance, so therefore he must be hated. Therefore he must be doing something wrong. It's like, actually, no, it's the opposite, right? He became such a leading social figure. But from an athlete perspective, to your point, it's so unfortunate that now you've gone 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that'll work out for him and his hopes of still just playing in the NFL.
Yeah, look, it's going to come down to talent in the end. It's just, you know what, you guys know what it's like. There is the old boys part of things, right, is what kept him out. And I do understand within the locker room not wanting a distraction of one guy. Tim Tebow, it's not the same situation at all. But, you know, Tim Tebow had a little bit of that where he got way more attention than he deserved for the athlete he was. And I think that probably scared some teams. I guess it would have taken a somewhat brave general manager, I suppose, to give him a chance when there was so much around him. But why can't there? How can there not be one that did? That's what drives me nuts.
Don't you think this is a bad comparison? But like Johnny Manziel, like everything that comes with Manziel is loud and distracting, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know if he's a good enough player, or he wasn't a good enough player to accept that distraction. What you're saying is, if Kaepernick is a good enough player, or he might have become a good enough player to live with that distraction. Whether you agree with the distraction or not, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just saying different types of distraction. Manziel's a partier, and Kaepernick's an activist, so it's different. But it's, you know, I think some teams
Manziel was still getting chances, though. That's also kind of what's
and Colin Kaepernick was 5 times the quarterback that Manziel ended up being.
That's
right.
The difference is, but the thing is right now when you're looking at it, he comes back at 34 years old. He's still an activist. He still has a huge following, but you know, he's got to worry about playing football. And then, you know, when he's playing, park the activism as far as on the field or whatever, do whatever. But then the minute that it's over, go back to being yourself. Like he should be afforded that. That's my point. With Manziel, I just felt that there was so much noise around that guy, and he wasn't good enough to warrant that noise.
No. Look, Kaepernick was blackballed.
That's true.
The way it was, and that's a massive shame that there wasn't one owner or one general manager who was strong enough to say, yeah, we'll put up with this stuff because it's the right thing to do to give him a chance. Because you can't tell me that in those days he wasn't at least good enough to be. There's a lot of bad quarterbacks in the National Football League, and there has been. There's always, you know, 8 or 10 that are awesome, and then you got about half the league that has substandard starters, and by the time you get to backups, there's no way that
Donkey
he couldn't
show.
Have been at least a top-tier backup in the National Football League after a year off, after 2 years off. That whole, I think, historically, we'll look back at that as a significant black eye on the National Football League.
Yep.
Yeah. Duffy, you tweeted about Ray Liotta. Sad to hear of his passing. That infectious laugh. That's all I remember when watching Goodfellas. He just had that laugh.
That performance at Goodfellas was outrageously good. Oh, like, so good.
Yeah.
Did he win the Oscar
for
that?
Yeah, he was in Field of Dreams, too, wasn't he?
So somebody asked me today, what's your favorite Liotta movie? And it'd always be Field of Dreams for me, because Field of Dreams is one of those handful of movies that every time it's on AMC or whatever, I have to watch it. And the part with the dad always gets me at the end. And when Ray Liotta's leaving the field, and Ray Kinsella, Kevin Costner, says, "It was you, wasn't it?" And he turns around and says, "No, Ray, it was you." Like, I still get goosebumps like thinking about that line now. So that wasn't nearly as significant a role or as great acting as Goodfellas was, but to me, he'll always be Shoeless Joe in Field of Dreams.
Jimmy, play catch with Dregs in Studio 6 tonight.
Hey, Dregs.
Yeah.
Want to have a catch?
And then he would give you the finger.
Is this heaven?
Yeah.
No, it's Studio 6.
No, it's hell.
No, it's Studio 6 in Scarborough.
Oh, man, it. Gone too soon. 67.
Yeah, I met him one time at the Cup Final in 07. What was the Cup Final? The Anaheim-Ottawa, 07? The 07 Cup Final. 07. He was at a game in Anaheim and only met him for like 2 minutes. And the one thing that struck me, like no TV makeup, he looked way older. So that's 15 years ago. I felt like he looked 20 years older than he looked on screen. But yeah, 67 is still a really young man.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, still really young. Anyways, we lose another good one. Duthie, appreciate you taking the time. And yes, I'll stay up. How about that? I will stay up. I
just want to catch you. You got to stay up for the game and the half hour post game that we do on SportsCenter.
And
Trillo, that's the real test.
Your dog
I tune
will
into
keep
the segments
up.
In the morning. Yeah, my dog will keep me up. Don't you worry. All right,
exactly.
Duthie, we'll check in with you later.
All right.
That is James Duthie, and you can catch him as well on every night during the playoffs, doing the breakdowns and everything. I remember a couple years ago I was filling in for him. Those are some tough shifts, especially since I always seem to get the nights. Of course, I'm always going to feel this way, where
double
there was
overtime.
Like double, triple overtime. I'm like, one time we ran out of food. I don't know, Old Dog, if you and I were working together the night, but we ran out of food. Bobby Mack took down all the jubes. That's his weakness. Do not get in the way of Bobby and Chewy Candy. The jubes are his weakness. And we literally were left with Funyuns and sour keys corn nuts.
Yeah,
barbecue
I remember
corn nuts.
I've been fortunate. I haven't done a ton of games this year, but zero overtimes. Zero.
Yeah.
Maybe one.
Yeah,
one, and
one
it ended
year,
quickly.
Man.
Well, that
there was one year where it
we
was
all worked at NHL Network,
overtime.
And it was outrageous. Some of those, what were they, 10:30 start San Jose, LA, and it was like, God.
My favorite one is I worked with Mike Modano one night, and we were supposed to like work the weekend or whatever. It's like Friday, Saturday, or
he
whatever.
He said, "I ain't coming back."
We're walking out of the studio at 3:30 in the morning after like a double overtime, and then I said, "I'll see you tomorrow." He goes, "No, you won't." He was like, that was it. Like, he was gone. I'm like, all right. Yes, he's not. This TV thing's not for him. So that was awesome.
Take some stamina. Take some stamina to do those late games. I don't care what anybody says. That's just brewing. The older you get, man, it is just harder.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to do FanDuel Best Bets. The Grappler's going to jump on, gentlemen, to do his bets here. So that's how we're going to end the show. Grappler's going to give you some advice. Coming up next year on Overdrive. All right, well, I had a blast as the show's coming to an end. I'll be back tomorrow, but we're not done yet because the Grappler is jumping on now. Do you want me to do the intro here, Grappler, or are you doing the
intro? I'll get right into it. I got the read. I know everyone wants to get on with their evening, so I'll just jump right in here. Okay, today's Best Bets is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Okay, we're going to start with the Battle of Alberta. I think it's fair
to
go
there.
Hang
on a sec. I love the way you put yourself on TV, too. You just didn't do it through the microphone. Anyway, good plug for yourself. Carry on.
I appreciate that. That's all that matters. I got 2 big minutes on here. I got to look my best, right?
I love it. Take advantage, bud. Go ahead.
All right. We're going to start with the over-under for goals tonight, which is set at 6.5. I think with how wild this series has been, we're due for some sort of low-scoring game. I'm thinking 2-1, 3-2. So I'm taking the under, which is, set at 6.5. Can get that at -110. I also think Markstrom finally has a big game, contrary to what Craig Button said. And with the over-under of saves being set at 27, I got it. I mean, regardless of how good Markstrom is, the Oilers are just going to continue peppering the Flames with shots. So I got to think he's getting more than 27 saves. So you can take that at -120. And then moving even further out west, the Jays start a 4-game set versus the Angels tonight. We got our boy Hyunjin Ryu on the mound against Shohei Ohtani. Not feeling great about Ryu. Going to take the Angels on the money line to win big at -166. Today's Best Bets is brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Back to you,
Nailed
Andy.
It. Whoa, nailed it, Grappler.
You butchered a little bit at the end, but that was very well
it was
done.
It was a little choppy towards the
good
end,
stuff,
but
good
it
stuff.
Is what it is.
It's okay. I handed
not
it
the
off.
Best.
<It's okay.
laughs> Thank you, Louis. Thank you.
I'm about to go and enjoy a wonderful evening. I'm going to my neighbors who have a wood-burning pizza oven in their backyard.
Nice.
This girl's having pizza tonight. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Can't wait to do it again tomorrow. Wait, what's the – we're back tomorrow at?
4 p.m.?
We'll check then.